Well, thank you very much for coming today. I want to just introduce this by saying I actually have a hearing problem. I can't hear on one side, and so I can't tell how loudly I'm speaking, which usually leads to a problem of not speaking loudly enough, sometimes too loud. So if you could just tell me if you're having any problem, I'd appreciate it. So I wanted to thank, first of all, my colleagues, Rizal Renman. Rizal is a graduate of the Latin American Medical School in Cuba and currently a first-year family practice resident at the University of Alabama. And Mario Cruz, who's a colleague in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of New Mexico. No financial disclosures that I'm aware of. So just as learning objectives, I want to describe the conditions of the active duty GIs that seek civilian health and mental health services, to discuss the characteristics of GIs who use such civilian services, to analyze the rationale for civilian services as an alternative to the contradictions inherent in military services for active duty GIs, and to analyze how such services may contribute to peace. I also want to acknowledge a small amount of support from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Center for Health Policy at the University of New Mexico, a very supportive group. These are some of the people who have participated in the project. All are volunteers, except for a couple of vets who work for the project part-time. Mary Lou Noble is the coordinator of the mental health component. There are a number of project coordinators currently, Jeff Engelhardt, a veteran in New Mexico. There are volunteer intake specialists, most of whom are vets, therapists who work voluntarily on call in various parts of the country, advisors in psychiatry, law, the GI Rights Hotline, where we get our referrals. It's an organization of 25 peace and faith-based organizations that collaborate in the hotline. And we've gotten a small amount of financial support. The program, to the extent it needs money, is actually supported mostly by clinical earnings of myself and a couple of other practitioners. And by the way, I wanted to also acknowledge Hans Buwalde, who is here, who is one of our most productive, kind of amazing therapists based in Chicago. These are websites that present the project. This is an article that Mary Lou and I have published about it. This is the Resist website that provided a small amount of funding, and this is the website for my recent book. And I'm mentioning the book mainly to say that it contains a more in-depth presentation of some of these issues, among others, and the proceeds from the book are actually going to support the project. And I have more information if you'd like. There was also a complimentary presentation yesterday at the Peace Caucus that I'll be glad to share with any of you if you're interested. So methods. The sample was actually drawn from the clients of our network. The network consists of civilian physicians and mental health services providers. It's called the Civilian Medical Resources Network. We offer our services to active duty military personnel. It's a mixed method approach involving both quantitative and qualitative analysis of data collected during intake and follow-up interviews. So the purposes of the network are to evaluate, to provide independent medical or mental health evaluations and treatment in the civilian sector for people currently on active duty in the military. Why is this necessary? Well, this work provides services that address both physical and psychological problems. At the GI's request, the evaluation may include letters to the command or other authorities about the relevance of physical or psychological problems, or both, to the need for discharge or reassignment. The activities may include counseling by phone and referrals to professionals to work in the GI's geographical areas. Professionals who conduct the evaluations do so usually at no charge, occasionally at a reduced charge, if the GI does not have usable insurance coverage and cannot afford to pay customer fees. About half of our clients are actually AWOL, absent without leave. There's a huge epidemic of this currently. Thousands of people living underground. And, of course, they are not eligible for VA or military medical or mental health services. Second, to collaborate with the GI Rights Hotline that I mentioned earlier, the Military Law Task Force, and other organizations for outreach to improve medical and psychological services in the civilian sector directed to DGIs. Now, this effort began in 2005. I'm actually a conscientious objector, and I've done similar things with quite a few colleagues during Vietnam and also during Iraq I. And this effort started in 2005. We're currently intaking about 3 new clients weekly, about 120 annually. We realize that we're dealing with the tip of the iceberg here. That's one of my motivations for presenting this, to encourage any of you who are interested in participating. Procedures. Well, we receive referrals from the GRS hotline. Just in brief, this is a hotline that receives an estimated 3,000 calls a month from active duty GIs around the world needing help in various areas. If there's a medical or mental health problem, the counselor has the option of referring them to us. The instructions for the referrals are at these websites, including our secure, encrypted website that allows for confidential collaboration around the country among various of us who are intaking patients and providing services. This is a big challenge that was developed by one of our veteran coordinators, actually. Next, please. So this is just a couple of slides from the intake part of the database. This is counselor information. Next, please. Client information, contact information, a briefcase summary. Now, the intake worker, who is again usually a vet, explains the procedures, obtains verbal informed consent. This actually has been approved by the Human Subjects Committee at the University of New Mexico. Do an intake interview, describing the problem, demographic information. We use the patient health questionnaire as a validated instrument to give psychiatric and substance use diagnoses, including depression, suicidality, and so forth. And then the PTSD checklist, which was mentioned earlier, for PTSD diagnoses. This is how the intake looks about client information, including contact information again. These are the personnel in the network who are working with the clients, so listed there, and then we do notes that then we can send in an encrypted and confidential way to the participants. So this is some demographic information. The patient health questionnaire, and this is the somatoform symptoms section. There are several others. Next, please. These are the items about suicidality. And this is the PTSD checklist. So after completion of the intake workers refer the information to the clinician on call. Our clinicians are usually on call again as volunteers for about 1 week at a time. The clinician contacts the client when possible. GIs visit network professionals in person, but often an in-person visit proves unfeasible. For example, some of our clients are contacting us by cell phone from Afghanistan. They're often based in bases that are quite remote geographically. So in this case, the professionals assist the GIs by telephone or Skype consultations. So the clinician provides services short-term to address the mental health crisis, refers to physical health professionals if physical problems involved. Now, interestingly, we were expecting that about half the problems would be physical at the beginning. As it turns out, less than 20% are actually physical problems. And I usually triage these and figure out what to do myself. And the clinician prepares documentation needed for reassignment, discharge processing, et cetera, and develop templates for these documents of use. The clinician shares the documentation with the client, the GRS hotline counselor, military professionals, and command as appropriate. The network professionals generally provide care, as I mentioned, free or greatly reduced cost, and all of our core staff members volunteer our services, except for a part-time paid coordinator currently. Now, in the research component, this is actually mainly to document and to evaluate what we're doing. And we've been following descriptive data. The following descriptive data are as of last year, covering the previous 1 year, and we're updating this currently. So this is just an overview of the gender distribution, which corresponds roughly to the gender composition of the military services currently, widespread across the country. These are the distribution of diagnoses. About 18% with depression without suicidal or homicidal ideation, 17% with suicidal or homicidal ideation, 17% with PTSD, other 27%, medical surgical, as I mentioned, 20%, and then don't ask, don't tell issues. And this is about 3% currently, it's actually increased to some extent. Clients are spread across a variety of ethnic and self-identified ethnic racial categories. And I don't have time to go into more of the quantitative data. I did present some of them yesterday, and I'll be glad to provide others to those who are interested. These are the most frequent diagnoses, though: depression and suicidality, as I mentioned, around 17 to 20%. Homicidality, actually, in about 5%. And how we deal with that, I'll get to in a minute. PTSD, substance use, anxiety disorders, eating disorders, and the tremendous problem of military sexual trauma. I thought it might be helpful to just give a couple of case summaries of some of our clients. So this is actually a fairly typical client. During his tour in Iraq, a GI witnessed the violent deaths of several close friends as well as Iraqi civilians. One of his assignments involved removal of blood and body parts from military vehicles. After he returned to the States, he suffered from depression, post-traumatic stress, and generalized anxiety. He was actually hospitalized temporarily after one of four suicides. When he learned that his unit was to be redeployed to Iraq, he went AWOL, and that's when he contacted the GI Rights Hotline, and it was referred to us. And he was at that time living with his wife and infant son in a rural area, was working in odd jobs. He learned that the military police and the local sheriff's department were trying to find him. What we found is that this varies a great deal around the country. In some areas, especially in rural areas, it's quite common that the civilian police get involved in this. In urban areas, it's less common. We don't exactly know why. During the phone interview, the GI expressed suicidal ideation as well as an intent to kill specific officers if he returned to his original unit. Another case, the GI with two fractured vertebrae experienced severe numbness in his legs when he wore a flak jacket. He could not move his legs. Previously fractured an eye socket after which surgeon was inserted a metal plate. He still experienced double vision and could not focus. Other problems included rectal bleeding and renal insufficiency. When he contacted the hotline, he was actually scheduled to be redeployed to Iraq in about 2 weeks. I'm mentioning this because one of the main things that we see in our clients is imminent redeployment under conditions that are, for me as a clinician, unbelievable. Very severe physical problems, active suicidality, just being put on psychotropic medications, etc. This is actually quite common. Seeking a medical discharge, he went to sick call, stated that a medic told him he was in bad shape, but the Army needed him, so he would not discharge him. Instead, he was told he could get physical therapy in Iraq. Had a hard time seeing a doctor because the sergeant kept telling him he shouldn't go to sick call. The GI requested documentation in connection with his request for discharge, and secondarily also sought care for his problem. This is some of the documentation that we've provided. This is actually about the first case, the client who was actively suicidal and homicidal. So, you know, by the Tarasov and other medical, ethical, and legal requirements, we're actually required to intervene when we find out that a person intends to kill somebody. And so this has happened in this case, and this has happened in actually a surprising number of cases. So I actually wound up calling the military police at the base that he was being taken to after he was captured by the Sheriff's Department. I requested their urgent attention in view of potentially life-threatening set of conditions that are affecting this client. My report of blah, blah, blah expressed both suicidal and homicidal ideation. He suffers from several severe psychiatric Disorders that give grave current disability based on suicidal and homicidal ideations and plans. I believe it's at high risk of harming himself or others, blah, blah, blah. I should emphasize that holding this knowledge of his high risk of suicide or homicide, I'm legally and ethically required to try to prevent these things from occurring. I believe the major problem is potential loss of life to be avoided if you respond to my recommendation. Please contact me so we can discuss how to protect the safety of him and the person who's at base number, blah, blah, blah. So what happened to this client that is actually, as he was on the way back to the base, the military police intervened, picked him up, and submitted to the psychiatric hospital, offered treatment. Things actually went surprisingly well. He eventually was discharged with a not unfavorable discharge, and is now the president of the American Legion in his local community and actually works in law enforcement. Now, this is kind of the extreme end of the good outcomes, obviously, but these are the kinds of situations that arise in an uncommon exercise. These are some of the qualitative themes that have arisen from the qualitative part of the study. First of all, in the economic draft, the vast majority of our clients are GIs who have enlisted because of the lack of employment opportunities or other economic challenges. The vast majority who seek assistance come from low-income family backgrounds, mainly ethnic and racial minorities. More many from those minorities. Deception. It's a very common problem that we've found that underlies the psychological disorders very often, that both GIs and reservists focused on perceived deception in the recruiting processes, as well as longer, more frequent tours of duty than expected. Most reservists did not expect combat duty. Violence without meaning. So both physical and emotional problems derive in part from the experience of violence without a sense that the violence leads to progress in meeting military, political, or social goals. Most GIs who have sought civilian medical assistance do not understand the purpose of military involvement in Afghanistan or Iraq. So there's no narrative to explain the suffering involved. Many have experienced violence affecting civilian populations, including children. Such problems, that physical problems actually comprise the minority, and we've already talked about that. The main complaint is among the GIs is that military and medical professionals have diminished the importance of such problems. So they've sought a confirmation of the problems as a route to discharge or reassignment. Psychological problems are the vast majority, and I won't go into that beyond that for time. A surprisingly high proportion of clients, about a third overall, report either present or past suicidal ideation or previous suicide attempts. It's a very prevalent problem. Psychological problems frequently result from the transformation of ethical conflicts into psychic distress. And this is something that I actually want to emphasize because the emphasis on resiliency in terms of reintegration, and these are very, very worthy attempts that are being made with GIs. Actually, this element I found has not really been brought out sufficiently. several features pertain to families. There's stress focusing on the challenges of caretaking responsibilities for non-military family members. Intimate partner violence is extremely common, as is marital or partnership dissolution. Personality disorder, and this is something that quite a few of our patients have experienced. And to make a long story short, what this involves is an attempt by the military psychological personnel on a post hoc basis to diagnose personality disorder rather than to attribute a military cause to the patient's psychological distress. Because if they do diagnose a personality disorder, it's a pre-existing condition that then disqualifies the client from continuing benefits after that. And this is something that, a surprising number of our clients are dealing with currently. Suicide. Substantial number of GIs report suicidal ideation that's gone unrecognized or unacknowledged. The military statistics indicate a rapid increase in suicide among GIs, currently one per day, and 18 suicides per day currently among veterans. probability of suicide increases with numbers of deployments and time spent in the war zones. Suicides committed stateside rather than combat zones may remain underreported. More GIs will die from suicide than from combat injuries in Iraq and Afghanistan. Status in the military, just briefly to say that when clients are AWOL, they actually have an easier time getting services from us because they have less barrier to communication. When they're in the military, they actually have more problems because they're working, they have schedules, it's harder to get private time on their cell phones, etc. privatization of services. Now, part of this actually has to do with privatization and outsourcing of services, in that a substantial part of the services offered to GIs and their families now through TRICARE are actually outsourced to managed care organizations that are for-profit organizations. And they introduce similar barriers to access as all of us face in dealing with managed care civilians. And so it's hard to get appointments, it's hard to get referrals. Trying to get a referral, for instance, for a TRICARE client to a civilian neuropsychiatric specialist is extremely difficult, et cetera, et cetera. Next slide. So as a result, I just want to ask you, the corporate chief executive officers benefit the most from the Iraq War heads? Any guesses? Halliburton? We'd usually think of military-industrial corporation, but it's actually the head of HealthNet, whose contractor, Value Options, provides mental health services for GIs and their families. The CEO has benefited financially the most from the Iraq War. Double agency. Now, I want to emphasize this because this is, in my opinion, the most fundamental issue that we're dealing with. As they encounter GIs with health and mental health problems, military professionals must consider the goal of maintaining numbers and readiness of combat forces. The military goal tends to contradict the goal of helping the individual patients. This is a Hippocratic oath problem. Military professionals' role as a double agent raises inherent tensions and increase GIs' express needs for services in the civilian sector. And I just wanted to emphasize that we found in that area tremendous problems, not only in terms of trust because of the double agent role, but actual problems of confidentiality, in that military health professionals are not required to maintain confidentiality of their encounters, and actually are often asked for the information from the command. Violence involving civilians. So this is, as I mentioned before, is a tremendous issue. The direct witnessing of one's own, or one's colleagues, killing, maiming, et cetera, civilians, including children. And then there's the issue of torture and human rights abuses. So all of the GIs are trained in military conventions prohibiting torture and such human rights abuses. However, in practice, many GIs also have learned that officers can tolerate and sometimes even encourage the use of torture and similar abuses. So this contradiction creates stress, stigma, and shame about unethical actions perpetrated by military colleagues. The professionals working with GIs in the network have noted high levels of shame, which inhibits GIs from seeking help. Challenges. Fundraising to support veterans for coordination, intake, and outreach. Interested folks can donate at the website. Recruiting and retaining therapists. So I ask any of you who may be interested in helping in this area, please let us know. So to conclude, active duty GIs increasingly seek military mental health care in the civilian sector. As opposed to the Vietnam War, when we had a military draft, current military endeavors depend on men and women predominantly from low-income and minority backgrounds. There are a handful of congresspeople with kids in these wars. Military veterans' medical care periodically enters public consciousness, especially after scandals such as these. And by the way, I wanted to just mention the Fort Hood massacre. Several of us are trying to figure this out, the massacre that happened last year by psychiatrists. I'm pretty convinced at this point that the issue of double agency was fundamental in that. I'm going to go on. We can discuss that later if you'd like. These are generally below the radar because the skewed distribution of persons suffering from war limits, that is to the marginalized groups in our society, limits the attention of this issue to policymakers and other leaders in the society. There's scarcely a mention of this, for instance, in the presidential debate. The network has encountered GIs who, along with their families, experience a profound need for supportive services. Their suffering leads to increasing medicalization of resistance to war. With accumulated physical and psychological injuries, GIs turn to professionals in the civilian sector as a route to less dangerous assignments or to discharge. Ethical conflicts, which derive from contradictions of violence without clear purpose, exacerbate whatever damages might otherwise warrant medical attention. And to add, the unmet needs of active duty GIs deserve more concerted attention by the medical profession and our society's leaders. And as Miranda mentioned, for the first to-do item, has to be more effective strategies for peace. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Wasteen. Thank you.